So nice to have you back, Lori, on this podcast.
Hey, quick weekend, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Let's get started, Lori, with what has happened to Donald Trump again. Can you explain to us what has happened and how did it happen?
Well, this is different from the assassination attempt in Butler. In this case, this fellow Ryan Rout, not quite sure how you pronounce his name.
Wesley Routh. Yeah,
it's got a couple of ways to go at it. That's the problem with English. Too bad we don't have like Spanish pronunciation. That way I'd know how to do
exactly.
It. Rote. Yeah, Rote. Anyway, he reportedly set up on the golf course at the outside perimeter. There are apparently some bushes or something there that he could hide in. And was there for 12 hours. And had a rifle, had a GoPro, and was going to try to shoot Trump. Fortunately, what happened, and so I've actually played on a golf course where with Joe Biden. I didn't play with Biden, but I was a member at the golf course at Avenel in Potomac, Maryland, one day, and we were out there in an afternoon, and Biden came out to play. Well, I think he was actually with Hunter at the time. And the way it works is there's a Secret Service detail with the president, or in this case, vice president. And then there is a cart that goes out ahead. You know, they stay one hole ahead and they check everything out. They're at least 300 yards ahead to see what's up. And that cart with those agents, they come up. As soon as they saw the rifle, they saw what looked like to be a gun barrel. They didn't stop and go, mother, may I shoot? No, they immediately drew their firearms and shot, which apparently scared Mr. Ryan. And he abandoned his back. You know, he didn't stick around to collect anything. He ran, coward. He was going to try to ambush somebody, but he didn't have enough balls to stand up and fight it out. All right. At least you know what he is. And so he left his backpack, a GoPro, and a rifle. Hightailed it to a vehicle. Somebody got an ID of him getting into the vehicle, and he gets away. Now, people are playing Monday morning quarterback said, well, how could that guy hide in the bushes for 12 hours? Well, I'm not aware of the Secret Service ever having a protocol to sweep the exterior perimeter, and because they felt that having the advance team, if you will, out in front by at least 300-400 yards gives you enough time, and it worked. You know, for with the benefit of hindsight, we could say that in the future, the if Trump's going to play golf at a place, there should be a roving patrol around the exterior perimeter. They may even want to not allow anybody to approach that exterior perimeter, or at least spot to see if somebody's, you know, hanging out up against the fence, peering through. Not good. But, you know, in this case, there's not a lot to level fault at the Secret Service. Secret Service did its job. Now, the real question: how the hell did this guy know when Trump was going to play golf? Number one, he's not local. So how did he, you know, he flew in? Where did he get the rifle? Now, it's one thing if you are traveling with a firearm, you have to go to the airport in advance. You have to fill out paperwork. You have to identify and put it in a case. So the case has got to be locked up. Yeah, you could travel that way, but there's no evidence of that whatsoever. And if the early reports are true, that the serial number was partially filed off, you know, did he do that or did he buy it from somebody that tried to obscure the serial number? So this really raises questions of who else was helping him. And where did he get the money to travel to that location? You know, you look at this guy's travel, he's going all over the place. And, you know, I I don't know how where he gets that kind of money. You know, I don't think he was flying coach. But once he gets on the ground in Florida, it's unlikely that there's no way he could have legally purchased that gun. Because I understand he has a criminal record, number one. Number two, he's not from Florida. And the ability to buy that kind of firearm in Florida is restricted. And in any event, he would have had a 3-day waiting period if he could have. So just a lot of unanswered questions. You know, it's possible he got the gun, picked it up on it's called Florida Gun Trader. And people go online and they sell, it's a person-to-person sell. But even then, he would have had to walk around with a bunch of cash, selling an AK rifle like that. You know, it's easily $900, I would think. Possibly 700, but it, at least 700. Walking around with that kind of cash and then transporting the gun and then getting to that site. So lots of questions still to be answered.
Yeah. Looking at this guy and the way that he was, his activities on the social networks, and how did you find he was supporting Ukraine and trying to recruit soldiers for Ukraine? And do you think that in his mind, he was, because of the support that he had for Ukraine, he was going to do this, or it was something beyond that?
No, I think it was. I think the his belief that Donald Trump was not favorably disposed towards Ukraine and was going to cut funding and bring the war to an end, and enraged him. I think that's one of the motivations. But he was a committed Democrat. And the rhetoric of the Democrat Party against Donald Trump has just been atrocious. There's no wonder that people are trying to kill him, because that's what the Democrat leadership is calling for. They keep saying, "Oh, we shouldn't have violence," but then they say he's an existential threat. We got to stop him. Well, the only way, when you've got an existential threat, that means a threat to your existence. When I do firearms training for concealed carry, you can shoot and kill somebody if you have the will to kill somebody that's attacking you. If you feel that person is threatening your life, that your life is in imminent danger, you can shoot and kill them. Well, that's essentially what the Democrat language is promoting, that Donald Trump is in imminent danger. He's a threat to your survival, and we need to stop him, which means it empowers certain people to go out and try to kill him. But you can't rule out the possibility that the head of intelligence, Kirill Budanov, over in Ukraine, may have could have had a hand in something like this. Anything, they all have to be looked at and investigated to rule it out.
But they're going to find out who's behind this.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, this guy,
because he's alive, he can just talk.
Well, he can talk. The question is he going to tell the truth? That's a whole nother matter. But he clearly has been on social media pages touting hiring Afghan fighters out of Afghanistan to come fight with Ukraine against Russia. So, and he's been a very vocal advocate for Ukraine. So.
The question is, if he was hiring some soldiers from Afghanistan to send them to Ukraine, who's going to pay for them?
Well, he was wanting the Ukrainian government, which means U.S. taxpayers would have been paying for it.
Yeah. And right now, Larry, with what's going on between NATO and Russia, do you think that Ukrainian government would get the permission, or no, with the reaction that we had from the Russian government, they're just cautious about that?
Well, what day is it? Okay, today's Monday. Now, if you would have asked me that last Wednesday, I would have said, it looks like they're going to do it. We've had Congressman Michael McCaul out of Texas saying, I've talked to Blinken and they're going to give the green light to Ukraine. And then in London was leaking like a sieve for the Keir Starmer. Yeah, he was going to do it. Absolutely. You then had, it was like, what was the name of the movie with Richard Pryor and Gene Simmons, or Gene Wilder, you know, the black guy and the white guy go, you know, off on an adventure. That was David Lammy and Anthony Blinken. Okay. They went off of their adventure to Kiev, or Kiev. And you know, they came out of there and it seemed positive that, well, boy, they're gonna give the green light for Ukraine to launch, they call them long-range missiles. Nobody can quite define what a long-range missile is. You know, I guess if it goes more than 10 kilometers, it's long range.
Yeah.
But then Putin comes out the next day and makes a statement and puts everybody on notice that any attack using these weapons by the West means the West is involved in attacking Russia, because you're using your intelligence data and you're using your soldiers to program those missiles and you're using them to launch them at us. So we don't blame Ukraine. We blame you, the United Kingdom, you, the United States, you, Germany. And it will be treated as an act of war. Whoa. You know, you could see, hear the screeching tires, you know, breaking, coming to a quick halt. By the next day in Washington, the buddy movie between, you know, the Lammy and Blinken was a lot more tense. United States let it leak. Nope, we're not going to approve this now. Keir Starmer, the Brit prime minister, is under pressure from the previous five former defense ministers. You know, Ben Wallace and I forget who else is on the list. Encouraging, oh, no, you absolutely go ahead and launch the strikes against Russia on our own. You know, let the Ukrainians do it, but we'll supply it. Yeah, we'll do it, even if the Americans don't want to. Well, it remains to be seen if that's going to happen, because Putin's warning was pretty stark and no room for ambiguity. If you do this, you will suffer the consequences.
Do you see any sort of difference between Starmer and Sunak?
Starmer's a little taller. Starmer's a little fatter. And Starmer may be a little poorer. Other than that, no. Well, I'll take that back. Starmer appears to be more of a fascist. And what do I mean by fascist? He's somebody that's willing to use the political power and at the behest of military industrial complexes, and while treading on the rights of the individuals, of the British citizens. So yeah, but I don't see a lot of difference between them.
But do you think that, how about the public opinion in the United Kingdom? Do you think that they want to change, they want some sort of changes? They're thinking differently from the government, from Sunak, from Starmer right now? Or we can say the majority of people are in line with these two governments?
No, I think what I have seen is that the polling for Starmer is now, it's plummeting. You know, I couldn't believe the other, I thought it was watching, you know, Babylon Bee television. You know, Babylon Bee is a satirical site. And it said that the British Parliament, the members of Parliament of Starmer's party, had just voted to cut the funding to senior citizens to pay for their winter heating bills. I was like, what? No, that's got to be a joke. No, that's what they did. So they're going to let the old people freeze to death while they're giving money to Ukraine. Makes sense? Got to ask why. Who is financially profiting from this? Who's financially benefiting? We don't have good answers to that.
Larry, here is an article in the Washington Post. It says Ukraine is bleeding out. It cannot fight forever.
Who wrote that?
Let me check it out if we can find it right or here. And I'm going to find it, Larry. But how right now, considering this, do you think, again, if you remember, are we going to, in your opinion, can we have some sort of hope for the future of the conflict when we see these type of articles coming out in the Washington Post?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's let me check. Okay. David Ignatius.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a sign. It's always ask who wrote it, because it tells you, are you getting some real reporting or are you getting some government messaging? This is the U.S. government sending a message, because David Ignatius, if this was a sexual relationship between a man and a woman, he'd be the mistress of the CIA. Okay. So what we're talking is a close personal relationship between these two. So that means a lot. That he's signaling, he's carrying water for the U.S. intelligence community to tell you that they believe that this thing is in trouble.
Yeah, it means no more escalations. Can we conclude that?
Well, yeah. In fact, let me just, while we're talking, let me just pull it up here.
Okay.
Because I think that's really an important piece in light of what, come on here. Oh, there. Yeah, it's loading up. That's going to take a while. But yeah, look, the public opinion in Washington has shifted. It's no longer, we're going to fight with Iran, with Ukraine to the bitter end. Now they go, it looks like this is the bitter end. Okay? So they've recognized that the party's coming, it's over. And they're preparing an exit plan. That's the only way I'd look at it.
Yeah. Still loading?
Yeah, still loading. Hang on. Let me try one other. I hate the Chrome browser. But Chrome is the only one that works with StreamYard, really.
Yeah. So.
Oh, come on. It's taking me into the studio back to
let me find it out here. Let me put it up. Ukraine.
I got it here. There it is. Come on. Load up. Okay. There it is. Okay, so he's going in detail about how bad things are on the ground. And he's talking about that he was in Ukraine. He met a bunch of wounded soldiers at a facility, a center funded by Viktor Pinchuk. Well, Pinchuk is one of the ones who is the mastermind of bringing Zelensky into this. But he said, listen to this. He says, listening to their stories, you realize that Ukraine is bleeding out. Its will to fight is as strong as ever, but its army is exhausted by a ceaseless drone war that's unlike anything in the history of combat. And so he goes on, he says, Ukraine doesn't have enough soldiers to fight an indefinite war of attrition. It needs to escalate to be strong enough to reach a decent settlement. But it doesn't have the means to escalate because it doesn't have the troops, trained troops. To escalate, you need a combination of things. You're going to need about 100,000 trained soldiers. Ukraine does not have that. You're going to need to have tanks, armored vehicles, artillery, fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters that could sustain and support one of those, 100,000-man army that was going to launch an attack, a counterattack. Ukraine doesn't have that. So, this is the delusional part. So I'm just paging down that, here is David Ignatius, who's been, let's call him, he's like a teleprompter. The CIA types in what he wants him to say, and he says it. He's not an independent voice. He's reporting that there's a disconnect. That the Ukrainians want to strike deep into Russia, but if they do, it's only going to make their suffering worse. But again, this shows you how Ignatius is a neocon. He quotes it toward, he says, he came away from this conference that was held to, promote support for Ukraine, thinking the United States should take more risks to help Ukraine. It matters how this war ends. If Putin prevails, it will harm the interests of America and Europe for decades. Well, duh. Thank you for acknowledging what some of us have been saying for a long time, but I don't think that's a bad thing that Russia's interests harm the West, because the West needs to mind its own damn business and stay at home instead of going around the world meddling. But that's not what it's prepared to do. And so the United States is caught in this dilemma. The war is going it's going badly, and it's getting worse every day for Ukraine. So what's the options? Oh, double down. Let's give Ukraine some weapons that they don't have troops that are trained to use them, so we'll have to supply our own personnel to use them. Let's fire them at Russian military bases, attacking Russian military targets. Without anybody stopping and thinking, hey, how would we, the United States, act if Russian soldiers were in Mexico launching Russian-supplied missiles at U.S. military bases in the United States? Do you think we'd give a damn? Do you think we might be a little miffed? Absolutely. We'd view that as an act of war, which is exactly what Vladimir Putin said last week to the West. If you do this, it will be an act of war, and we will respond appropriately. So that's why you saw, the Pentagon put a halt real quick to this notion that they're going to go out and send these missiles and greenlight Ukraine making these strikes. Because it won't just be Ukraine. It'll be the United States. It'll be Brits. So far there's a hold on that. But here you got Ignatius, sort of still this neocon movement. Man, we got to do something. We got to do more. Let's go out and let's confront. Let's do more. And then what happens? If they do that, then Russia's going to turn this into a war, from a special military operation to a war, which means they'll be attacking NATO targets.
Yeah, if we think that how Ukraine right now can escalate the war, can escalate the situation, in terms of offensive, they're not capable of doing this right now.
Correct.
And ammunition, they don't have that much. And how about long-range missiles and nuclear weapons, dirty bombs or something like this? They can do that.
Well, with long-range missiles. Understand. So what is, in your mind, what is a long-range missile?
Yeah, something that can hit deep into the Russian territory.
But define deep.
Yeah.
What is deep? 100 miles?
Moscow.
100 miles, 200 miles, 300 miles? So the when you look at the ATACMS, the Storm Shadows, the Taurus, the JSAMs, you know, those are, a lot of people will say the JASSM, S, what is this, Joint Air-to-Surface Strike Missile, I think is the terminology, but the acronym pronounced JSAM. I think the maximum range on one of those is like, can go up around 300 miles, maybe. Okay, so you hit Moscow. What do you hit? You know, you drop a missile in on an airfield, you damage two or three planes. Well, Russia's got multiple, you know, 100 plus airfields scattered around the country that can be used to launch aircraft strikes. So Ukraine, not only to Ukraine, the United States doesn't have enough missiles in its stockpile, in its inventory, to take out all these Russian bases. I mean, if you're going to strike a military target, the notion is to destroy it, make it is incapable of being used. Well, all that does is immediately guarantees that the Russians will escalate. And you got to step back and say, okay, who's got the capability to escalate? Russia's basically doubled the size of its army in the last 2 years. You know, from say 750,000, 800,000 up to now about 1.3, 1.4 million.
Now, Putin is talking about 2.4 million.
Who is?
Putin.
Yeah, they may go that high.
Yeah, right now I've just learned. Yeah, he's in the news right now. They're talking about 2.0 million soldiers.
2.4 million, yeah. So, yeah. And what, you know, United States Army right now, you got 450,000 roughly. So that's five times the size of the U.S. Army. And if you lump in the Marine Corps, it's still at least a good four times larger than anything the United States has can field. And, you know, when you add in the Germans and the French and the Brits, you're still going to be lucky to be at 800,000 with those, all three of those countries added to ours. So it's just, you know, it's madness what they're talking about. The Ukraine has no means to escalate. They don't have it. Even if you gave them the weapons, where are the trained personnel? They don't have the trained personnel. You know, it's not just one thing. This is sort of like dealing with, you know, you've got somebody that weighs 300 pounds, but they're 75 years old. Okay? So, yeah, you can put that 75-year-old on a diet, and they might be able to lose some of that weight, but it doesn't change the fact that they're still real old and they can't function, do what they did when they were 30. And in particular, let's say that it's a 75-year-old woman that weighs 300 pounds. Yeah, you should lose weight, you do a variety of plastic surgery. She's still not going to have a baby. You know, it's impossible, biologically impossible at that point. So, the same way with the Ukrainians. You have no place to get a sufficient number of trained troops, because right now, the Ukrainians are dying. They are losing in casualties 60,000 soldiers a month. If they're recruiting, if they're recruiting 20, 30,000, you know, you're the engineer. You do the math for me. But last time I checked, that's a negative. You're gonna still be going down because you're not replacing what you're losing. That's what they're facing. And you got all these people in the West who are in denial about it, refuse to recognize it. I mean, good God.
Yeah, even if they go with that plan, long-range missiles, Larry, they're going to face the same problem that Israel is facing right now. It's not sustainable for them, as you've mentioned. And nobody is capable of providing them with those type of missiles.
Don't you realize you're an anti-Semite for refusing to recognize the glorious victory of Israel? What's wrong with you? Oh, yeah. So here are the Houthis. Okay. The guy's wearing sandals with a curved knife. You know, they're walking around. They wear man dresses. You know, that's what I call them. No insult intended. But, you know, they're not considered the most technologically sophisticated. But by God, the other day, they fired a ballistic missile, reportedly with hypersonic capabilities, recognizing that not even the United States can produce a hypersonic missile. But these little brown guys from Yemen did it, and it completely evaded Israeli air defense and U.S. air defense. You know, Tel Aviv, we have a problem. Yeah, you got a problem that you picked a fight with somebody you can't beat.
And it wasn't a hypersonic missile.
I don't know. I've heard it described as a hypersonic missile. Now, it could be. Not, but the Houthis didn't build it. They would have got it from Russia, China. There have been even been reports that the Iranians have produced the hypersonic missile. Again, I don't know if that's true. I don't have access to classified information. But whatever it was moving so fast that none of the Iron Dome missiles were able to intercept it. None of the defense systems, the Aegis, is it, that are on board the U.S. destroyers and cruisers off the coast of Israel, could intercept it. That should catch people's attention. And then, you know, as that's happening, there are other credible reports that the Hezbollah attack we talked about, I think, on Friday from 3 weeks ago, that actually hit the U.S., the Israeli base at Gilat, called for Unit 8200 headquarters, and killed and wounded some personnel there. So in the midst of this, as Israel's finding it impossible to quell all of these attacks, they decided they're going to launch, you know, Netanyahu's insisting they're going to go into Lebanon. And I'm waiting to see if news comes out. They were having a cabinet meeting today. Alistair Crook talked about it earlier, to get rid of Gallant, the current defense minister, and replace him with a crazy who wants to invade Lebanon as soon as possible. That Gallant has been the one that's been saying, we're not going to invade Lebanon. Because he correctly recognizes it will be the death of Israel if they do.
Even we know that Hezbollah didn't use any sort of ballistic missile against them in their attack on Israel. Right now we see Houthis are using ballistic. It's so, the picture is so interesting when you look at this.
Well, yeah. And in fact, people say, well, see, we're right. Iran hasn't retaliated yet. Well, how about what happened if Iran supplied the missile to the Houthis that hit Israel? I would count that as Iranian retaliation, wouldn't you? So maybe Iran did just retaliate. You know, they're not going to destroy Israel entirely and take it apart for the assassination of Haniyeh. But they are going to make it, you know, pay. And it's very possible as well that the attack of Hezbollah on the Unit 8200 may have been coordinated with Iran, and they may have provided intelligence and targeting information that Hezbollah used. You know, see, people expect the Iranians to be stupid. I don't know why, because, you know, the Iranians are, as a people, are very well educated and not anything but stupid. But that they're going to come out and go, yeah, we're gonna retaliate. We're going to hit Israel with X, Y, and Z, and we're going to do it next week. And no, they're not going to, you know, announce it in advance. They're not going to do that. But if you're stepping back and saying, okay, has Israel suffered some serious hits in the last 3 weeks? Yeah. Yeah, the attack on 8200 and this attack yesterday with a ballistic missile created some havoc and nightmare.
If they want to escalate the conflict with Hezbollah, Larry, I think that even having Trump in office, if Trump wins, they're not capable of doing this, because at the end of the day, two aircraft carriers from Middle East, they just went to the Pacific.
And I thought it was just one. Did both go?
One? It was one?
Yeah, I thought it was just...
I've read two. Okay. But at the end of the day...
Theodore Roosevelt, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems at the end of the day, on the part of the United States, they're not thinking of having any sort of escalation in the Middle East. But with these new changes that you've just mentioned, the Ministry of Defense, they're changing him just to escalate the situation with Hezbollah. It doesn't seem that the United States would support that.
I think the United States would. I mean, the United States is going to advise them, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And then once they do it, we'll send them money, we'll send them weapons. Because they'll be. I think the Israeli Defense Forces or the Israeli Occupation Force is going to be in a real pickle. That they're not going up against lightly armed Hamas guerrillas. Hamas, it was not a major fighting force. I wouldn't even classify what Hamas has as an army. That is, it is a paramilitary organization. It does have some chain of command. It does have some trained people, but it does not have, or it didn't have at the outset, a bunch of experienced combat veterans that are organized in military formations. Hezbollah does. You know, the Hezbollah has been fighting in Syria against the Islamic extremists over the last 10 years. So, you know, and that experience they bring back to the line there. So there's no way Israel, even if they use a nuke, has no way of wiping out Hezbollah. So the Hezbollah fighters are going to be there, and they're going to create a real problem for Israel.
And I don't see why Houthis cannot get involved in any sort of conflict if it happens between Hezbollah and Israel.
The Houthis have already admitted they're involved, and they've shown it by action. I mean, they've sunk ships, they've hit ships with missiles, they managed to drive the U.S. carrier task force out of the Red Sea. You know, we finally withdrew because we couldn't stay there. We weren't able to do much.
And nobody knows how many ballistic missiles do they have right now. So,
yeah, it is. It's going to be interesting. You know, Israel, I'm sure, is going to try to take some retaliatory measure towards Yemen. And that's just going to lead to Yemen fighting, you know, firing back. I mean, you got to admit, these Yemenis, they're tough little bastards. You know, they're resilient. And what they've exposed is the impotence of Western military power. There are limits. We got ourselves so wrapped around with nuclear weapons that leads you to say, nobody can stop us. We're all powerful. But then you can't really find a way to use the nuclear weapons without setting the world on fire. And so then you're left with a more of a conventional military force. And there the United States has proven to have a very, very inadequate military force.
Larry, do you think if they change their Ministry of Defense with the current face of this administration, they're capable of using nuclear weapons without telling anything to the United States?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think the individual they're talking about bringing in is he is a religious extremist, is very close to the settlers, and has a reputation for being a hothead. But he's gone on the record. The quote I heard was, "I will only join the government if I'm assured that we will be allowed to invade Lebanon as soon as possible."
Oh,
yeah.
And how about, Larry, do you see any sort of influence AIPAC having on these people in Israel? Because they're helping these people in Israel. How about their influence on them? Are they happy with the situation in Israel right now?
You mean AIPAC?
Do they really want to save Israel? Because the way that Israel is going right now, it doesn't seem that they want to save Israel.
Well, but AIPAC is solidly on board with what the government of Bibi Netanyahu wants. I mean, they're thoroughly enabling that conflict. So, yeah. It's just there's nobody to put the brakes on. That's the problem. You know, like Dwight Eisenhower did during the Suez Canal crisis back in, I think, 1954, where they had the Israelis and Egyptians, the Israeli and Brits got together to take the Suez Canal, and it was. Eisenhower then intervened and said, no, get out, give it back. We had the clout to do that then. We do not have that now. And the one of the dangers is if the Brits decide to act unilaterally, the Russians aren't going to view it as unilateral action. You view it as joint action between the cooperation between Brits and the United States, and we'll be attacked. The prospects of the United States being physically attacked by Russia, and I'm not talking about in Hawaii or in Puerto Rico places, but I'm talking about continental United States, I think is it's around 50%. It's a coin flip over the next 6 months.
Yeah. Larry, Zelensky officially confirmed that China has imposed restrictions on the supply of drones to Ukraine. And is it going to influence their capability significantly, in your opinion?
It'll hurt them a little. I'm not sure what percentage of drones that Ukraine's using that China accounts for. But this isn't the only example. Zelensky and his government have made some horrific comments this week about the Chinese and about, what was the other country? Was it India or Brazil? They've been obnoxious and not doing a good job on the diplomatic front, not doing good diplomacy.
And it seems that Switzerland announced that they're not going to have a second peace talk in Switzerland. It seems that the way that China and Brazil was rejecting their, because they were asking for some sort of peace plan on the part of Brazil and China, which was rejected by these governments.
Well, yeah, it is. Zelensky's been insulting to the Brazilians and to the Chinese in particular. What's the incentive for Russia? So far, you know, Russia is capturing probably 3 to 5 square miles of territory every day. So they're rapidly taking back territory they controlled in 2022 for a while. The Ukrainians have no answer. It's a broad front. You know, think about stretching a line from your shoulder, and the Russians are attacking all along that line. Well, Ukraine's got to go figure out which hole to plug. You know, the dam is leaking. You got six holes. Which one do you plug? You plug one, and then by the time you get that patch, the others are worse. Then you go and try to patch those, and your original patch. That's what Ukraine is facing. They've got more leaks than they can stop. And instead of retreating and coming back to a position where they can consolidate the front and create a more organized defense, they're staying out there deluding themselves, pretending, oh yeah, we can survive this.
Yeah. Just to wrap up, Larry, Lloyd Austin, in his recent talk, he was talking about that at the end of the day, we have to have some sort of negotiations to put an end to the conflict in Ukraine. He was mentioning a lot of things, but at the end, he said that negotiations is the way to come out of this conflict. And Stoltenberg, today, he was talking about that the way to put an end to the conflict would be, as Lloyd Austin mentioned, would be a political settlement. And do you find it right now, in your opinion, are we getting to the point to have some sort of negotiations behind the scene? But because we know that, first of all, they're not willing to announce that we are going to negotiate. Behind the scene, they're going to talk CIA with the intelligence in Russia. They start talking, or maybe, and after that, we're going to learn about that.
So Brazil is playing Germany in football. It's the second period, is the second half. There are 5 minutes remaining. Brazil is up 4-0. And the Germans say, hey, let's sit down. Instead of finishing the game out, let's finish that. Let's negotiate an end to this, figure out who wins. You think the Brazilians would agree to that? No. They're ahead. They're going to finish the game out. Germany's going to lose. That's the situation on the ground in Ukraine. Ukraine has lost. They have no way of coming back, no way of winning, no way of sustaining this war for another year or two. You know, this, I don't know how the people right now have survived in Kiev that are in any apartment buildings or condos that are 10 stories or higher. Without electricity, unless they've had a generator run in the elevators. I lived once on the 21st floor in a condo over in Fort Lauderdale or Pompano Beach. And I tried walking up from the parking garage once up to the 21st floor. And I was younger, I was a little bit younger then. It ain't easy. Now, I guess if you did that every day over a week, one of two things is going to happen. It's going to kill you, or you're going to be really, really healthy and strong. Well, winter comes on, and we had Zelensky the other day with Fareed Zakaria admit, yeah, the Russians have destroyed 80% of our power grid. You got 80%, and then you're in the throes of winter? You know, water can't get pumped up without the electricity on. Water can't get pipped up to the top floors. The sewage doesn't work. The heat doesn't work. You know, nothing works. And they think that they can keep this going. No, I don't see it. I don't even see. Let's say they survive. To remain somewhat, you know, intact, where they can live in Kiev without having to be running for their lives. That, you know, come next March or April, Ukraine's going to be an even worse situation than it is now. And I did see the statistics on population, and one of the ways they're measuring it is number of SIM cards and telephones. The number right now is that it fell from like 40 some odd million to 19 million. That means you've got fewer people using cell phones inside Ukraine.
Yeah, I think when we look at the Ukraine, the way that it was destroyed during this more than 2 years of conflict, it's unbelievable, Larry.
Yeah.
And how was that? When you look at what Victoria Nuland said and how amazingly they have decided not to negotiate, and the way that they literally destroyed Ukraine, and they're just talking about some sort of game. It seems, in the eyes of these people, it seems that it's like a game that they're losing. They're just leaving, like Iraq, Afghanistan, just leave it there.
Yeah, it is a game. They're not paying any price. You know, she's got a good job. She's getting money. That's the problem with these guys. They're not paying an actual cost. So there's no accountability. That's what they've gotten into, a situation of zero accountability.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
I will see you on Friday.
On Friday, yeah.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye-bye.